You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Penny a la Podcast. You may know me as NBA Injury Report on Twitter, and this is episode 344. Woo! That's a lot of sodes. On today's sode, Alex Wolf returns for our thrilling conclusion. This is part two of Markers for Success for the upcoming season, in which we discuss what the Knicks need to accomplish in order to consider the upcoming season a, what's that? Success! On part one, we discussed the front office acting like a normal front office, Kristaps returning to health, Frank and Kevin's development, and draft positioning. On today's sode, we're going to talk about David Fizdale, clearing cap space for next offseason, developing second draft guys, making the playoffs, and his canter, and more. Before we get started, just want to welcome all the new listeners. The start of the season has seen an explosion in listenership. So, welcome new guys. Stick around. I think you're going to like it. Also, one quick reminder that we do voicemail bag sodes. Hopefully once a week going forward. 929-377-5103. Call up and ask me questions. Rant. If it's good, we'll get it on the air. All right, let's start the show. The conclusion of Markers for Success for the upcoming season. Hit it, Marv!
Yes!
Tier 4. This is where I start to question myself. There's one thing, I have two things in tier 4. One I'm sure of. One I'm like, I don't know, this could also be the bottom. But when I wrote it out, I felt like that was the right place for it. One thing that I'm sure belongs in this tier 4 is just the establishment of David Fizdale as our head coach of the current day and the future. So on some level, this goes hand in hand with the front office. But while it's extremely important that we finally keep a coach here for a long time, it's not the end of the world if it doesn't work out. But like, it is super important. And it looks like, you know, we talked about this earlier, it looks like he can get the players to buy in. But we kind of need to find out how is that going to translate on the court, you know? Is he going to run the right schemes? Is he going to make the right in-game adjustments? All those sort of technical things, which are just as important as building relationships, as we said before. And I talked a little bit before about, you know, building the roster up, and a huge part of that is free agency. It looks like he's a good free agent recruiter, so hopefully he shows himself to be an astute student of the game as well, and someone who's a good game manager, and all those little things that make coaching so valuable. So that, to me, is an easy thing to place in Tier 4. The one that I'm sort of questioning myself on now that I'm looking at it, because I go back and forth on this, but I think creating cap space via trading high-priced veterans could wind up being super important. The only reason I kind of question this is because I'm not sure how important it is that they sign a top-tier free agent this offseason, but if things, like you said, like work out to the point where even without KP, they're a competitive 500-ish team, and then KP comes back, and you know, and everyone loves Fizdale, and he's doing a great job. If they can open up, if the Knicks' best case scenario happens, and they can open up, you know, multiple max roster spots or a max roster spot, then it's not as crazy, even though the odds are way against someone like a KD coming here. It becomes less insane If you have that roster or that cap flexibility, and you have that best case scenario happening on the court, so like when I talk about creating cap space via trading high price free agents, I'm talking about I would love to get rid of Lee. You know, I don't think that's possible. We talked about this a lot during the Lee report card episode, but I would love to get rid of the remaining year on Lee's contract, and I would be okay with trading Timmy for cap space, but it's much less of a priority than trading Lee, who, you know, I just don't think has a future with the club and seems kind of ornery on some level to me in a way that I don't think he's... I think he'll be professional and help the guys, but I think he's not super happy with being here in a way that, like, will add to the vibe around the clubhouse in a way that's not positive. I don't know how negative it is, but all of that wrapped up into one, that sort of... I don't know if I believe this as I'm saying it, but those are the two things in Tier 4. For sure, I think David Fizdale establishing himself, and then questionably this cap space. What do you think about those two?
Well, we are in agreement with those two. However, my Tier 4 is actually has four things in it.
Oh!
So the aforementioned draft positioning, which I didn't have in the last one, I have right. in this one. I also have establishment of David Fizdale, mm-hmm. which, as you said, I mean, it's important that he starts laying down the groundwork here. Like, if we really think that this new front office that's sort of young-ish, that seems to be forward-thinking, if we really think that they can be around here and stick around for a long time, and we really think that Fizdale can be here and stay around for a long time and kind of become our version of like the RC Buford, Greg Popovich of things, then we're going to need to start getting this stuff going right from the rip, you know, like this year. It can't be like there can't be any of the bullshit, like the drama, you know, there can't be any like Derek Rose misses a game type crap. Like there can't be even just from last year, like the Noah crap, like we can't have anything like that. We can't have things where players are getting so pissed at the coach for one reason or another that they feel like they can just leave the team.
Right.
We can't have any situations where players are just unhappy in general. Like, and I feel like he's really going to need to just kind of set that sort of culture where it's like, you guys have to know that I know best and that I have your best interest in mind. And please don't act out against me if you think that I'm not doing right by you. You know, like set up more of like an open door policy, that sort of thing.
Right.
Where guys can come to him and feel comfortable coming to him. I think a lot of that's going to be important for Fizdale this year to really set just not even just necessarily a good not even necessarily just a good product on the court. Obviously, he needs to have a good product on the court, but he needs to also just establish that he's, you know, he has everybody's best interest in mind, and that everybody knows that, and that everybody knows that the decisions that he make are ultimately for the better of the team, and not with any sort of agenda behind them, sort of thing. Yeah. So that's what I feel about him. The cap space thing I had as well. So okay. I also had that. I feel kind of the same way that you do about it. Like I if we're considering the season, quote unquote, to be from, you know, from now until the end of the regular season, when the Knicks most likely won't make the playoffs, if this is the window that we're talking about, I don't know necessarily that like you have to move Courtney Lee like right during this window. Like there's a chance you could probably move him at the draft or something like that if need really be. Or you could move him, like, if you hit free agency and it's like, okay, Kyrie Irving's on board, like, all we need to do is move Courtney Lee, then you could figure something out. You know, it might mean attaching a protected draft pick to him or something, but it's not the end of the world.
What's happening for me here is we're starting to transition to multiple tiers where these things coming up are positives if they happen, but aren't necessarily crucial for the health of the franchise going forward. I think that's sort of what's happening here.
I think we're getting to that level, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this sort of thing, like, I would love to move Courtney Lee. I would
say
even, love it. I mean, I hate to say it because I actually do like him, but like to a degree, I wouldn't mind moving Hardaway if we could and take back expirings, because you just feel like there's bigger fish that could be had with the money that he's being paid.
Yeah.
And then
I don't think he's the I'm not going to rehash this whole thing. Don't think he's the disaster that many people made him out to be. But yeah, I think you could probably do better with that money.
You could the money could be spent a little
better.
Probably
could be. Yeah, that's you know.
So I mean, and those are two. Those are probably your only two high-priced veterans that would need to be moved, because like Lance Thomas has one more year on his deal after this, but he could be bought out for like $1 million, right, which is basically nothing. Noah, it seems like maybe by the time this podcast comes out, will be no longer a Nick anymore.
Yep.
And will be a, you know, a free agent going to some team for the veterans minimum. So he's not going to be an issue anymore. His money's going to be what it is for whatever his buyout is stretched over those 3 years.
Totally agree.
So yeah, I mean, if we move Lee or move Hardaway, great. If not, I have faith that they could find a way to move them if it came to a situation where like we needed to sign a free agent kind of thing. So it's not the most important thing to me, but it would sure be a nice little extra thing. The other thing, though, that I had on this tier, my fourth thing, is something that I'd put probably like, I don't know, I guess maybe I could have made this in two tiers, but I think that all these things are sort of important in their own way, but not necessarily like the most important. Mm-hmm. But I have Mitchell Robinson's development here, okay, as well, because I think it's going to be really important. Like, clearly this guy has first round talent.
Yeah.
You know, be it if you think it's late first round talent or lotto pick talent, top five talent. I mean, clearly he's already a steal based off where he was drafted.
Yeah.
Just based off what we saw in summer league. So I think it's important to cash in on that in a way that the team sort of didn't with Billy Hernan Gomez, which if you recall, just a year ago, I remember I even did a podcast on here where we were talking about what he could potentially be, you know, and what type of minutes he could be getting and what his development would be like. And, you know, the Knicks sort of screwed that whole situation up because Hornacek sort of banished him, you know, and decided that he wasn't worth his time on a shitty team when, you know, really you should be giving those sort of guys a chance to get better,
yeah,
and give them some NBA minutes. So I think it's very important to not just atone for the Billy Hernan Gomez thing, but also like Mitch is clearly a better overall talent, particularly the acumen he shows on the defensive end. He's just like already a swamp monster. He just really needs to reel it in. They need to teach him well. I think it's going to be important with Mitch to like let him know that no matter what they do, it's all with his best interest in mind, even if they send him to the G League for a little bit to kind of hone his craft.
Mm-hmm.
I've said for a little bit, I think the best strategy with him, at least at first, would be if you're going on a road trip, leave him at Westchester and have him work at the Knicks facility, have him play for the Westchester Knicks while the Knicks are on the road. And then when you come home, play him during home games, like especially if you have like a homestand, let him play in the NBA for a few games, get his feet wet, try out some of the things he's been learning with like the development staff and see how he can do at that level. And then he can sort of like take those lessons back to the G League with him when the Knicks go back on another road trip kind of thing. And keep learning that way, because I think it's going to be important to like ease him along and make sure he doesn't, mm-hmm, get discouraged, and make sure that he's comfortable and is developed in such a way that it's like he could feel good about himself. Like, yeah, he wouldn't get discouraged about, you know, if he's with the team 24/7 and they start trying to throw him in right away and he gets into foul trouble every game and
sure.
you know, or you know, gets dunked on a few times or something or whatever the case, and it starts to get to him, I wouldn't want him to like have like a defeatist complex right from the start and have that carry over into how he develops the rest of his career.
Yeah.
So I think you've got like this really great bit of clay to work with, and you can either make it into something that goes in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, or it can end up a second grade art project. You know what I mean? It's it could be one or the other, but yes. I feel like it's going to tend to sway in very extreme directions with Mitch. Okay. Like he's either going to turn out to be like a super good player, like at the very least a quality NBA starter, or he's going to kind of flame out just from not being properly developed in the way that he needs to be. That's my thought. Sorry, that was a little long-winded.
That's all right.
I went all James right there. I was acting like I was the host.
I was waiting for you to finish so I could have a clean edit point, which I'm going to give us now. In just a second, we're going to talk about Mitchell Robinson and Tim Hardaway Jr. But before we do that, I want to talk to you guys about something that's very close to me, and that's attending live events. Did I say close to me? I meant close to my heart. You know what I mean. Don't be a jerk about it. Come on. We all make mistakes. We're human. We're fallible. And that human fallibility, that potential to maybe make an error, that potential to maybe do something incredible that no one's ever seen before, is what makes live events so thrilling. It's one of the things, anyway. It's why I have been to every Billy Joel concert at Madison Square Garden. It's more than 100 now. Every performance is different. Every performance is unique. You know, it's like a handmade rug is more expensive, more pure, more beautiful for the mistakes that are in it versus something that's made by a machine. You don't want to go see machines perform. Leave that to the EDM kids, right? Eating Molly and dancing to guys pushing buttons on their laptop. We want live stuff. But in order to get that live stuff, we got to buy tickets from somewhere. And if we're smart, we go to Vivid Seats. It's an app. You get it wherever you get apps. And it's the best. 100% guaranteed. You can pick wherever you want to sit. Think of that. You're like, I want to sit over here. You pick there. No more tyranny of people telling you where you set general admission. That's garbage. Unless you like general admission, then find some general admission tickets on Vivid Seats. Locked On listeners, we have a special deal for you. $20 off to your first $200 or more. Just use the code LOCKEDON at checkout. Vivid Seats, it's the best. Use it. Use it. Do yourself a favor. Enrich your life. Go see live events. Vivid Seats. I want to say to you, Alex, that I want to say something to you that many action movie villains say to heroes when they've got them, let's say, tied up in a chair. And that's, you and I are not so different. I have a very similar outlook to you. My tier five, however, includes Mitchell Robinson's development. So, refresher, my tier four was establishment of David Fizdale and creating cap space via trading high-priced veterans. My tier five is a two-prong tier, which includes Mitchell Robinson's development and Timmy's development. And I think Mitchell Robinson's is probably a little bit more important because if he reaches his very lofty potential, it'll mean a lot more for the Knicks. But it's two pieces who the odds say will not reach the sort of expectations that have been placed on them in some quarters. And in Timmy's case, it's that contract. The odds are he's probably not going to like really greatly outperform that. Mitchell Robinson, we talk about him being sort of this lottery talent. Odds are he's probably not going to live up to that. But it is possible that they do. If Mitchell Robinson hits, that will be a much bigger thing for the Knicks. You know, if he becomes the skinny Shaq that Trey Burke says he could be, then the Knicks are set forever. So if they actually do develop him to the very maximum of his capability, then yeah, that's huge. But the reason why I group him with a Timmy is because you don't have to hit on second round picks, right? Like you don't have to hit home runs with them. That's kind of why I have him this low. It would just give him a massive, it would give them, excuse me, the Knicks, like this massive leg up on team building if they did hit. And likewise with Timmy, you know, we're paying him lots of money. It's not impossible that he lives up to and outperforms that contract, but it's not likely either. However, you know, there is some development potential. He is still young. So if you know, wouldn't it be great if he developed into that outstanding sort of third banana, which is a weird phrase because all bananas are basically the same. I don't really know what like a first banana is. I was just thinking about that as I wrote it. What is a first banana? There's no such thing. They're all identical. But, you know, that's kind of why I grouped them together, because it's these sort of like, if they live up to their potential, it'll have a really good impact on the Knicks' future, more so for Mitchell Robinson. But at the same time, even though I love him and I can't wait to root for him and he has such immense potential, I don't know. I feel like it's less likely that he's impactful than Tim Hardaway Jr. is on some level, just by virtue of where he was drafted. But that's not, that doesn't encapsulate everything that's going on with him. So I don't know. But with their uncertainty and with their potential, that's sort of why I grouped those two together. Does that infuriate you?
No, not really. I mean, I'm just kind of curious though. In your, like, in your mind, if I were to ask you, like, in 5 years, like, so, or let's say 4 years, when Mitchell Robinson's first contract is up,
yeah,
what do you think? What level do you think he's going to be at? Like, what do you think his trajectory for his career is going to look like?
The one thing this I don't
like
have
first
a real
thing comes to your head. Don't overthink it.
I think he's all-star potential, you know. And I think, you know, it just seems really obvious his path toward getting toward that level. It's becoming a DeAndre Jordan type player. This rim runner, this vertical spacing kind of guy, this monster on the boards and around the rim, shot blocking. The question that is a big question, which we don't have an answer to yet, is his basketball IQ. Can he put it all together, or is he just a freakish athlete? He has wonderful instincts, you know, but that basketball IQ, I don't know, is there an analog for him of someone who's clearly so athletically gifted and has these defensive instincts who, like, doesn't put it all together, like a shot-blocking maestro who winds up sucking and flaming out? I can't really think of one. I would say
that there's been arguably as many of those type of players that have flamed out as any. The thing is, you just don't remember them because they like flame out so quick.
Okay.
Like, because
can you name
really
one?
Like Hashim Thabeet?
Was he an excellent shot blocker in the NBA? Not that Mitchell has been that yet, but
no, he was. Oh, so you're saying if they display that skill in the NBA?
Yes. Which
I was saying,
hasn't.
Like coming out of college, Hashim, like coming out of college, the beat was a killer shot blocker,
but was a but lumbering just, beast. And was,
yeah, sort of. I mean, he was pretty athletic, but I guess he was kind of a little more on
agile?
The stocky. I remember him being kind of agile, but maybe I'm remembering wrong. I don't know.
I remember him being like an ent in Lord of the Rings, those trees that can move.
Yeah, or like a ogre.
Yeah, you know,
big old Shrek out there,
kind of, sort of.
I don't know, maybe I'm remembering him wrong. That has been about 10 years now, so
isn't that long ago? Jesus, I'm old.
It has. I think it's actually been more than 10 years since he was drafted. Okay. I might be wrong about that.
I mean,
that
he could like easily 08. Flame out. He could easily flame out. But yeah, I mean, my gut is that his raw ability is so good that even if he's not like, you know, a franchise anchor, he's going to be an immensely valuable guy to have around. That's sort of...
Yeah, if I had to like take a, like, place a bet on what I thought Mitch was going to be at the end of his deal, I think it would be like he would project to be just a very solid starter, kind of like Capella.
Sure.
You know, like...
Which would be a fantastic outcome, right? I mean...
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, I mean, those type of guys are indispensable for good teams, you know? I don't know, like, I want to believe that he could be an all-star, and I could definitely see, like, the potential there, but I just don't know if I see that as the most realistic outcome with him. I just think, more realistically, I could see him actually becoming a starter. I would be very surprised if he flamed out, though.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
Just based off what we've seen.
I would say
the only way he would flame out is if he never figures out how to not foul guys.
Yeah. No, totally true. Like, and that to me is the ultimate in things I would never worry about for a second that rookies do. You know, it's like everyone fouls. It's just such a small.
Oh, no doubt.
You know, so yeah. And so
I mean, if he like literally never corrects it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it, sure. Most guys figure out at a certain point what they can and can't get away with, and they adjust accordingly.
The odds are he will not become an all-star. That is the probably the least likely outcome, right? The most likely is, I don't know. It's tough to say. He's in a really unique situation. So I don't want to say the most likely that he's going to flame out, although that would be if he was any normal second-round pick. And I don't want to say the most likely that he's going to be a starter, because there are obvious red flags. But I think it's way more likely he's a starter than a normal second-round pick.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, so that's my kind of that's the end of my tier five. You're on your tier five, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, I sort of sidetracked us for a minute there.
No, no.
But
we're good. The conversation is strong, so it's fine.
Yeah. So my tier five, again, we're in similar waters here. I've got, and actually I literally just split my tier five into two tiers.
Like
as you were going through yours, because I was thinking about it, and I'm like, two of these things definitely are not like the other two things. So at least in my mind. So I have tier five. We're on the same page with Tim Hardaway's development.
Okay.
I think that the thing with him is I think maybe we sort of have the book on him mostly at this point. And mostly what we're going to see out of him one way or the other is like improvement on shooting percentages and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how much more he's realistically going to add as a player, you know, like as far as like making huge strides, like adding a whole new skill that we've never seen before.
Fair. Better at picking his spots in terms of driving to the hoop. You know, maybe getting a little bit better with his handle, but you're right. I think that's right.
That's what I mean. Like getting better at certain things that he already does and already can do at a decently high level, but like not necessarily adding like trying to think of something like
pick and roll ball handling as like a major strength is probably not going to happen.
Yes, like he's not going to become an elite distributor. He's not going to become an elite ankle breaking shooting guard. You know, with his handle and stuff like that. But I think he can realistically get better at things. And I think that especially if the Knicks find themselves in a position where they're not going to trade him and he's going to be locked in here for the duration of his contract, like it's going to be important that he shows the ability to improve on those things and become sort of like if the Knicks were to become a very good team, you know, like dare I say a East Finals contender type team in the next few years. He's going to need to be probably your, like, Klay Thompson type. You know what I mean? Like, not – and that's probably being a little too lofty. And he's, like – Klay Thompson's, like, the potentially worst – the worst of, like, four All-Stars. But,
like a top five shooter of all time.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, you want him to be, like, the guy that you don't necessarily have to lean on to be your top option, but that you – can rely on to get what he gets, you know, like he would need to be like a reliable 17 point per game scorer, because that's where he's going to give you the most value is with his scoring. And he needs to be able to do it in an efficient way, like definitely more efficient than last year. And granted, for a large part of last year, he was in a position where he had to be a bigger part of the offense,
which he mentioned during media day, which was kind of nice to hear, because we'd been talking about that on the podcast a lot. Like, listen, he wasn't supposed to be the first guy, and he said that, you know, he was like, it was new to me.
But he's also probably gonna have to be the first guy for at least the first part of this year.
Yes, he is.
But puts himself out there.
Yeah,
but so yeah, not to drag on too much about Tim, but basically it's important that that he show improvement on things, while I don't necessarily expect him to add any like huge elements to his game. Then my second part of tier five, because obviously I already used Mitch in my tier four. I had second draft player development in my tier five. Second draft plus Dotson. So Dotson, Burke, Hezonja, Moutier, and Vonleh. Mostly because I think so none of those guys, except for maybe Dotson. What did they sign Dotson to for his contract? Do you remember? It wasn't a 2-year deal. Didn't they sign him to a 3?
Uh, I'm trying to remember.
Keep making weird noises.
I feel like they did something a little funky with him. They like used.
Let me just see. It was a multi-year deal, I think.
So they got
through 2019-20, 3-year deal.
With a. What is the red thing? Bowtrack. He's got
2019 is unguaranteed.
2019 is unguaranteed. And then is it red cap hold? I'm looking at something. Anyway. Huh.
Yeah, it's probably cap hold. I'm looking at Basketball Reference.
I'm looking at Spotrack.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at BREF, and it's got. It says signed a 3-year deal, and then it's got 2018-19, 1.3 mil. 2019-20, 1.6 mil, and it says 2019-20 is unguaranteed.
Okay.
So, anyway, so these are all guys with the exception of maybe Dotson, but they could also choose to cut ties with him next summer for no cost if they wanted to. But these are all guys that are sort of on tryouts this year.
Yeah.
You know, like, and you want to, you would hope that at least one, maybe two of them shows enough to the point where you would want to re-sign them next year.
Yeah.
And in the case of Burke and Burke, they'll have early bird rights on because right. they'll have 2 years, and Moutier, they will have full bird rights on and restricting.
Can't wait to use those.
And restricted. Hey, you don't know, man. Maybe he'll show something.
I know.
So they'll have full restricted free agent contract matching rights with him. And then there's like with Hezonja and Vonleh, they'll have that non-bird thing or whatever, which could be useful for Hezonja, maybe less so for Vonleh because he's getting paid the veterans minimum, but which allows you to pay like a certain percentage over their deal from the previous year or something like that.
Okay.
But at any rate, so all these guys are going to be on tryouts. I think, again, with the idea that the Knicks, you know, have publicly said that they think that they could be in a position to turn into a winning / contending team within the next couple of years if they hit it in free agency next year, you would hope that at least one or two of these guys shows out and proves that they could be a role player on a good team.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to make sure that at least one or two of them reach that point. I think if I was a betting man, I would say the most realistic options would be Burke and Hezonja.
By far.
Would show that they could really be like good pieces on a true good winning team. But the other three as well. I mean, there's definitely a chance that one or more of them could also show out.
For sure.
They're all, with the exception of Dotson, they're all former lotto picks.
Let me say, this is another example of you and I are not so different, Mr. Wolf, to put on my villain hat for a moment, because my tier six is two things that maybe should be one the more I think about them. But it's... Wait. In just a moment, we'll get to my tier six. But I wanted to quickly remind you that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily local sports podcast network in the fucking world, son. It is second draft player development. Those guys you mentioned, to sort of restate what you said. These are just kind of like, it's not crucial that any of these guys hits, but they're lotto tickets. Most of them probably won't, but it would be lovely if one or two of them did. And in my opinion, they belong below something like developing Frank or developing Kevin Knox, because the Knicks should act accordingly in terms of, you know, they shouldn't try to develop these guys at the expense of Frank Ntilikina, you know, when it comes to like Burke or Moutier, or, you know, Hezonja when it comes to the expense of maybe like a Kevin Knox, if it comes down to that. I don't know. But it is good to try to see what you can get from them. And then the other thing in this tier for me, tier six, would be roster churn, which is sort of using that open roster spot and trying to unearth another diamond in the rough. Again, not the highest of priorities, but it is important. The more I think about that, I'm like, how is that functionally different from second draft guys. But it could be, I guess where it's different is, and this gets, the waters get muddied because we threw Dotson in there, but it could be like an undrafted type, like an Alonzo Trier that you sign with this, who wouldn't technically be a second draft guy. Usually people use that to mean, use that phrase to mean, you know, a high draft pick who didn't pan out in his first location is now somewhere else trying to, you know, resurrect his career or, you know, continue developing, didn't reach his goals the first time around, that sort of thing. So that's sort of, and this is, and for me, the final tier of things that actually matter on any level. Big picture. It's second. I have two more things that I don't think really matter. I think I know how you're going to tier them, actually. I think you're going to split them into two tiers. But tier six for me is that second draft player development and roster churn. So.
Well, so to take your villain thing and push it to a more famous line, we'll do, you know, to them, you're just a freak. Like me. You know, that's the Joker. Have you watched that movie? I know you hate superheroes.
I don't hate them. I just wish, you know, you and the rest of the P&T boys would realize that when it comes to artistry, there's other things out there that may even be better than superhero movies. You know what I mean? Might give you a deeper, richer...
We've obviously watched other movies, man.
It's not, right, it's so, not clear to me. It's not clear to me based on Slack.
So to the listeners, we in the P&T Slack are a nerdy group, and a number of us like to talk about, you know, the biggest movie thing going on in the whole entire freaking world at the moment, which is superhero movies. Freaking. And then James, if he comes from a little lengthy absence, will pop in and start spouting off random bullshit to try to break up our conversation and, you know, kill our good time.
Aggressively.
He does not like superhero movies.
It's true.
Yeah, he'll pop in with like, hey, by the way, Capicola is the best meat. What do you guys think? What are your thoughts?
That's pretty spot on. James, but I have seen The Dark Knight. Heath Ledger's performance.
Shut your mouth with the Gabagool. Yeah.
Heath Ledger's performance is legendary. He makes that whole movie. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, in that movie, not to diverge, but that movie was more like a crime drama than a superhero movie. I mean, it was almost in its own category because.
Let's not go there. I could talk a lot about it, but this is getting long. So let's keep it moving. Anyway.
All right. We'll keep it moving. My tier six roster churn. We were, you know, you're a freak just like me. Roster churn.
Yeah.
because I think that the Knicks have proven over the last few years to be pretty adept at finding those sort of cast off players. Burke, one of them, obviously, that they picked up before the season, but he was. You know, they developed him for half the season and then brought him up to the big club. One notable guy was Troy Williams last year, who they actually let go. But, you know, a lot of people thought that he showed some defensive potential and some potential as a, you know, an NBA player. And they picked him up off the scrap heap, you know, partway through the season with an empty roster spot that they had.
Even like a Langston Galloway, who hasn't set the league on fire, but showed a lot when he was with the Knicks, and then, you know, the Pelicans got him. You know, people, you know, going back to Jeremy Lin, like, the Knicks weirdly have shown an aptitude for unearthing people who may not be go on to light the world on fire, but, like, have something to contribute in the NBA.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, I think, something that shouldn't necessarily be at the top of the priority list, but shouldn't be at the very bottom either. You know, it's definitely important, and it's definitely something that, if played correctly, can help your franchise in a big way. My other thing in tier six, I put making the playoffs there as well.
Yeah.
Just because I feel like if we reach a certain point where making the playoffs seems realistic, I don't see why they shouldn't try to gun for it. You know what I mean? Like if Kristaps had never gotten hurt last year, I would have totally been on board with trying to go for the playoffs.
Agreed.
Rather than tanking, you know, because it just looked like the team could maybe do it, you know, and even if they fell short, it would have still felt like a success to me.
I agree. I guess just
for trying. So that's, I put that there. It's really far at the back of my mind, though.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something that I'm expecting. And it's not something I'll be disappointed in if they don't look to make the playoffs. But it's good to at least, you know, entertain the possibility if it looks like a real thing that could happen.
So For my tier 7, I have two things that I don't think matter at all. And obviously we both agree that Enes Kanter's development is the least important part of this upcoming next season. It doesn't matter. We don't want him around going into the future. But I just want to, before we like kind of get to that, say I hear what you're saying about making the playoffs. If they do make the playoffs, like I said, things are going so right that I'm not even mad, even though I do think draft positioning is important. But I don't think it, I don't, at the end of the day, I don't think it matters whether or not they make it. Not even when it comes to attracting a free agent next year, because if they do want to land a huge free agent, which you could debate whether or not it's the right time, depending on who that free agent is, right? Obviously. To me, all they need to do is show that they can play like a playoff team once KP gets back. Like, that's the kind of thing that they need to at least hint at. Because obviously KP will probably be quite rusty when he gets back at first. And depending on how late he comes back, he might not show as much of being KP as we want. But I think if when you talk about making the playoffs being important for this upcoming season, the only way I see it being important is that they show that they're close to being that sort of team once KP gets back. And I think that based on the way he was talking during media day, I think Christmas is probably not realistic. And if he does come back, it'll be closer toward the end of the season than like the halfway point. That's kind of my reading the tea leaves of this here. And so if that does happen, I really don't expect them to challenge for that playoff spot. And I think it'll be fine if you are still hung up on attracting a free agent this upcoming offseason to just show that they have that capability to play that way once he's back. The fact of making it is what like I don't really think matters. But I do, I hear people when they say that like they have to show something, you know, if KP comes back. That's kind of as far as I'm willing to go there.
Okay.
With it mattering. But other than that, I mean, you know what? Let's put that in tier 7, and tier 7,000 can be Enes Kanter's development.
I was going to say tier 72 for Kanter.
I like that better, yeah.
I just think my biggest thing with Kanter is, like, it's so weird to think about because, like, he and like, Hardaway and Burke and even Dotson, to a degree, are, like, so close in age, but it just feels like Kanter is just kind of, he is who he is at this point. Like, there's really, for a 26, he's still 26, right? Whatever he is, 26, 27. Right. I mean, for a guy who's still, like, relatively young, it just seems like he's already exactly who we think he's going to be, and he's never going to change. And he's basically just going to be this player, like, for the rest of forever.
Yeah. He can add a three-point shot. He'll be more valuable, but, like, I don't think he'll come close to bringing you an asset in some sort of trade, right? Like, that's sort of the only thing you could hope for. Like, he just makes too much money. I guess there's an outside shot they could get, like, a second rounder for him or something, but I don't think that makes any sense. I don't think that's possible.
The only way that I can maybe see him fetching you anything of value would be if, like, a team that's, like, semi-legit contender has a player go down. Like, let's say, like, in theory, if Oklahoma City had Steven Adams go down.
Okay.
And they already know and love Kanter in their own sort of weird way, even though they shipped him off.
Can't play Kanter.
Yeah, I mean, they did definitely, like, to a degree, like him. Sure. They matched the deal that he's currently on because they liked him enough to do that.
Right.
So, like, if Steven Adams would go down for the year or something like that, and they were desperate for, like, a starting center, I could see them maybe trading, like, whatever expiring contract flotsam plus, like, a second round pick or something for him.
But no way is that worth the Knicks prioritizing that at all, right? This off chance. That's sort of why we're tearing this year, because it just shouldn't in any way be a focus at all.
No, despite being, you know, arguably one of your first or your top couple best players to start this year, you should hope that he's, like, the fifth best player by the end of the year.
Without thinking about it too much, that feels right.
Yeah,
he's so bad at defense that he's a huge detriment to the team. Like, it's not hard for me to think of one of the rookies at least coming in and being more helpful to winning. Even though, generally speaking, even people who go on to have good careers can have very poor rookie seasons. So,
I don't know, like, for sure that it's going to happen, but it would make me very happy if Mitchell Robinson could take over for him by like the halfway point of the season, like maybe even by like the All-Star break if we're really lucky. Like if Mitch
possible.
Could get there, I don't give a shit how bad Mitch is when he's in there, but like I would rather watch him play out there. You know what I mean? I feel like he's just going to play a more fun brand of basketball than Cantor's going to play.
He's one of the most one of the top things I'm looking forward to. That could be another segment, but I mean, Mitchell Robinson is just, who doesn't want to see this guy get on the court and see what he can do?
Yeah, I want to see him against NBA players really badly. Yeah, like real badly. Like genuine NBA players, not like friendly
guys. He's going to look so bad sometimes, but then he's going to look so good sometimes. It's going to be It's going to be the battle of consistency, which is like the battle of any player really looking to establish themselves. Like all these guys, we call them garbage or whatever. The garbage guys are capable of playing so fucking well. They just can't do it night in and night out. It's like it's like you're garbage, but you can play like an elite NBA player once a month. You know what I mean? Like that's what we're talking about.
J.R. Smith could have been Kobe Bryant. You know, J.R. Smith could have been Kobe Bryant if he put it all together.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
he's got that up top level for sure.
Yeah,
which is wild to hear myself say, but I agree with that, and to hear you say. I think we've exhausted our tears, right? We're all out of tears.
Yeah, that was all of them for me. No more tears for me.
No more tears. We've talked about this enough. I'm not even going to go back and like review them because the conversation was what this was all about. The richness of conversation with, you know, Locked On Knicks top tier guest. Some might say he's alone up there. I don't know if everyone would.
I think I'm alone on tier one. Yeah.
Some might say it, certainly by the numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I think it bears out. You know, the listeners love me. You know, I always get a couple new Twitter followers, like I say. You know, after every episode, I feel like that's...
You got to start lying about this. Be like, I get 100 new followers every time. You got to make it sound more impressive.
No. I'm straight with it, man. I get like 4 or 5.
Alex, you're ruining the mystery. But we love you anyway here at Locked On Knicks. Why don't you let the listeners know where they can find you on Twitter? And if you want to plug anything, do that now.
My Twitter is at the Alex Wolf, the ALEXWOLFE.
Yes.
That's where you can find all my sweet takes about the Knicks. I'm starting to get out of off-season mode, awake from my hibernation a little bit. Start tweeting more than, you know, once every 3 days. and then you can also check me out on postingandtoasting.com, SB Nation's New York Knicks blog.
Woo!
And the best one on the internet. Woo!
I like that. That was very Locked On Knicks style of you. That's house style.
I know. That's, you know, I pick up some tricks from you. You know, you got to learn from the best here.
Oh,
you have a very,
Alex.
A very good Michael Buffer mode. You know what I mean? Michael Buffer mode where you just flip on that serious announcer voice.
I was embarrassed at first doing that. And now I can't separate that from who I am anymore. I don't know where that ends and I begin. It's interesting.
I can confirm. I met you in person and you definitely do the same thing now. You have very exaggerated inflections, you know, sometimes. Like
Alex Wolf, so good to meet you.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, thanks again, Alex.
All right, of course, James. Anytime. Bye-bye.
All right, that's it for today's episode of... What's that? Yeah, let me hear it. Come on. Louder in the back. Locked On Knicks. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show. If you have not already, tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks. We're obsessed with growth. We gotta grow. Help us grow. Follow us on Twitter. I want more Twitter followers. I want to break 2,000 in the next couple weeks. Stop dicking me around. There's more of you listening than are following on Twitter. What are you doing? I know it's a horrible cesspool filled with awful people ruining your day. Just go on there and follow me, please? Okay. Be chill to each other. Spay and neuter your pets. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Only salt the pasta water. Take that, take that, take that. For data. B! Biggie's better than Pac. Peace.